Joseph.
And I'm Nick.
And this is Fish Jelly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay.
Oh, yeah?
You have a word of the day.
I do? Oh, you were serious.
Yeah. Well, because people don't know, I don't know what this is, but for quite some time now, Nick will sporadically tell me what the word of the day is. So I don't know if this is an app or an email he's receiving.
I don't know what I signed up for, but I do get a word of the day in my emails.
So today's word of the day.
That's how I learned. You learned some delightful things. That's how I learned about Poco Carante.
That's right.
Today's word of the day is from something called Word Daily. So this isn't even me. This isn't even my selection, but it's parasology, which is the use of equivocal or ambiguous words.
Mm.
So can you use that in a sentence?
No.
Okay.
I would need a second.
Okay. I think I would be, I'm not often guilty of parasology.
Moving on. So you watched the Jennifer Lopez movie, This Is Me Now,
which
we'll talk about on Patreon.
Oh my God.
But she also has like a companion documentary also available on Amazon Prime. And I watched a clip of it. And there's a moment when she's sort of complaining about all the celebrities who turned down being in the film. Because for people who don't know, there are quite a few notable people in it, specifically in one sort of component of the film where she has like a zodiac council. So you have like Jane Fonda, Jennifer Lewis, Kiki Palmer,
Kim Petras,
and others. Yeah. But in her documentary, she talks about all the people who said no, and basically because they're saying they're not available, like Taylor Swift, Jason Momoa, Jennifer Coolidge, Lizzo, Ariana Grande, Snoop Dogg, Anthony Ramos, who declined because he's good friends with Mark Anthony. And then when they asked J-Lo, she'd want Jennifer, but Vanessa Hudgens, J-Lo responds, for what?
Ooh.
But it caught my attention because Lizzo was on TikTok saying that she never said she wasn't available.
She never got the invite or something?
She never got the invite.
Okay, well.
But in the documentary, J-Lo saying, I don't want to force anybody to do this who doesn't go, this is going to be fun. Nobody wants to say no to me. I get that. But when an actor doesn't like the script or doesn't think it's going to be good enough or is worried about it, that's what they'll say. I know that. I've done it. Which I think is so, I just don't think this lady's very self-aware. Like,
No.
I'm surprised the people who are in it agree to be.
It doesn't look good for them. It's terrible.
It looks terrible.
I don't want to watch the companion documentary because, frankly, I don't want to hold her in an even lower esteem than I already do after watching that garbage. Jesus Christ.
But I thought it was funny that they read it and they didn't like the script and they don't think it's going to be good. And that's why they're making excuses.
I mean,
clearly she thinks it's good enough, but.
But it's also like, isn't this and the. Well, they're marketing tools, but isn't it personal for her? Shouldn't you just want people that are involved very personally and intimately with you and your social circle? Like, why do you want to have all these random celebrity cameos? Like, yeah. For your personal fucking bullshit.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway, moving on to the restaurant section. So.
Oh, yeah.
We tried. You saw something on Instagram about like the best burger in LA, and it was this restaurant called For the Win, and they have several locations. One is pretty close to us in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So we went.
See, this is why you can't trust these Instagram hoes with the food.
Well, so you sent me the thing and it did look very good. So the special thing about their burgers at For the Win is that the patties are really like, they're cooked real flat and thin. Like they're almost crispy.
They smash them. Yeah.
They smash them down. So getting like a triple burger,
repressed burger,
is almost like the equivalent of like a quarter pound. Like it's not that much meat if you get a triple patty. So we decided to go and I ordered online so we could just go pick it up. And first of all, this restaurant, this location is like on the worst intersection. Like it's so hard to get in and out. It's in this tiny plaza with insufficient parking. And then we ordered and we just ordered two double burgers and one order of fries, mm-hmm. which turned out to be like $37 yeah, with the expensive. Tip. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of spendy for what it was. We get the burgers home.
Well, first getting in there, there's they need some feng shui in there. I don't know if because of their popularity on Instagram, they haven't been prepared to accommodate that space correctly. But
well, the pickup window is right by the front door.
It's all the same. And the people working don't know how to communicate effectively. So it was more frustrating than it needed to be for burgers.
Yeah. And then getting them home, I did like my burger.
It was fine.
I don't think it was worth whatever it turned out to be, like $13 for this little burger. I think considering that a double from In-N-Out is equivalent in my mind, and that only cost like $5-6.
Considering I can just make homemade chopped cheese and have it be...
And the wait was
just as good, if not better.
I mean, the wait was equivalent to if you just waited in line at In-N-Out. I feel like you could have gotten, you know, you could get double the food for the same price and it would taste the same. So,
although I'm always annoyed at how hectic In-N-Out is. It's for what it is. Also, it's not that good to have to deal with a circus of people.
Yeah. You know, by my office, there's an In-N-Out. And so over the years, I've been a number of times because you kind of learn like when is the right time to go. But yeah, those people who will go at like 12:30.
What's wrong with you?
Or the late night. There's one in Torrance when we used to live in South Bay.
Yeah, we used to go there sometimes too.
Sometimes, but they like on the rare occasion, because it was very rare that I was ever like in that neighborhood, like in Torrance.
Was that Torrance or Lakewood?
I'm talking about the one in Torrance when you're headed to the Del Amo Mall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's that one that, you know, I would never be out there like late at night. But on the occasion that I did drive by at that hour, because that parking lot's huge. It's in a huge plaza. I mean, there would be like 100 cars. Like wrapped
around. The worst one is the one in Hollywood that's off of, is it Orange?
Sunset and Orange.
My God.
That intersection is terrible.
And these people just fucking line.
Oh my God.
Like, to me, that's a fucking hazard. That should be illegal. It's so annoying. Over some cheap burgers. My God, people. My God.
Then we went to Cantor's.
For the first time in well over a decade.
Because we used to go quite often when we lived in West Hollywood. Yeah, and then we stopped going because we moved. And then we were going to go a few years ago and noticed that the restaurant, the board had knocked it down to a C rating.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, can't go in there anymore.
And then he had some dark years, yeah.
But the other day we were driving down Fairfax, which is where Cantor's Deli is.
After Dune 2.
After watching Dune 2, Part 2. And I thought, oh, let's go because they have a parking lot. So... And you noticed that it was grade A. Mm-hmm. So we sat down. I will say the staff was friendlier than I remembered.
Very friendly, yeah.
But that food, speaking of my God,
I liked what I got.
The person brought out these, like a big old plate of pickles.
Not good pickles.
And those pickles were so soggy and stale.
Because pickles can become oversaturated. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Where yes.
They
weren't crispy.
Translucent.
Yeah, they start looking like they're turning into like gelatinous.
Yes, they're going back into the earth.
So that pickle, those pickles were gross. I ordered a cup of chicken broth soup and a bacon or a blue cheese bacon burger. And then you ordered like
pastrami au jus.
Like a French dip pastrami sandwich.
Yeah, yeah. Which I liked.
That soup that I ordered had no flavor.
Yeah, that was very bland.
It tasted like when you buy the low sodium chicken broth and then they just dump some noodles in it.
Instant noodles, yeah.
Yeah, like literally instant noodles. That was not good. Then I asked for my burger medium well. They brought it to me extra well done.
Well, it's also those patties that are so thin that are like, there's no way to not cook that
right
in that fashion.
And then I've never had, so they gave me the blue cheese bacon burger. The bacon wasn't crispy. The burger was like a hockey puck.
And the bacon wasn't crisping.
And then they put blue cheese crumbles that were yellow. Like it made me think that, did they scoop it with the mustard spoon? Because my blue cheese was yellow.
Or egg yolks.
Or like the egg salad spoon they used to scoop the blue cheese.
And they had a really nasty avocado on there.
And then they, in addition to putting blue cheese crumbles, they put that blue cheese dressing, like where it's real liquidy. Mm-hmm. And then, because, you know, they serve the... the ham cheeseburger with, you know, open style. So on top of the burger look like when you go to Thrifty's to get the ice cream and they scoop out like the ice cream, they did that with an avocado.
Yeah.
So there was this weird chunk of avocado that was covered in that blue cheese dressing.
And usually I'll eat all the stuff you don't want because I don't like to waste food. And I didn't finish.
Have you ever seen an avocado covered in blue cheese like that?
No, and it was not for me.
It was not good. Those, and then the fries were cold. Your sandwich was better than my burger.
Yeah, it's hard to fuck up an au jus though, right?
Well, sure. I think what Cantor's excels in, and probably why I would go back, are their bakery items.
Mm-hmm. That arugula.
Mm. Because we ordered, they have three different kinds of cheesecake, strawberry, chocolate, and or like original creamy. And the server, who was friendly enough, recommended the creamy.
Lupita.
And I did like it because it was like regular cheesecake, but then it had like cream cheese frosting on top.
It was odd. It felt like
very odd.
It felt like something my grandma would make.
But I actually liked it. So I would go back to Cantor's.
It's cute. It smells like an old building in there. It feels like a blast from the past.
It sure. It does there is a vibe and mm-hmm. there is parking. So I could be persuaded to go back.
Rarely have you given such specific notes on a dish, my lord.
Moving on to films released we didn't cover. Mm-hmm. Amelia's Children.
You know, this sounds actually quite good. It's a Portuguese horror film from Gabriela Brantes, whose last film, Diamantino, I have seen, which is kind of a queer, strange fantasy film. But more interestingly, it's got a few cast members that often work with Joao Canijo, including the great Rita Blanco. But it's a horror film. I might have to watch this on my own, but yeah.
Next, Shada.
This was Australia's official submission for this year's best, what are they calling it again now?
International
feature, directed by Noura Niazri, about a woman, an Iranian woman who flees to New Zealand, I believe, during the Iranian New Year. And that's all I know. But I feel bad because I passed up watching this many, many times over the past several months. So maybe eventually I'll catch up with it.
Next, Silver Haze.
Silver Haze. I believe I covered this out of Berlin in 2022, maybe. It's from a Dutch filmmaker that I more or less like named Sasha Pollock. And she has twice worked with an actress named Vicky Knight, who starred in Dirty God and now this film. And it's about a scarred young woman dealing with trauma and a sexual awakening. Years ago, she almost burned to death sleeping in the pub that her family owned. It's been a couple years since I've seen this, but a great central performance from the actor named Vicky Knight, who I felt the same way about Dirty God. There are a lot of similarities between both of those films from this filmmaker with that actor, but that opened this past week and could potentially be worth a look, depending on your taste.
Lastly, Outlaw Posse.
Oh my god, I wanted to watch this. It's just with Berlin and then coming back we were catching up on a lot of stuff this week. We did not watch it, but it's a new film from Mario Van Peebles, who has been a minute. You know, Mario Van Peebles came out real strong, New Jack City, but since then a couple other arguable films, including a very great homage to his father, which if you haven't seen Badass is really good, but it's been a minute for him. But Outlaw, you know, he had a film called Posse in the 90s too. Mm-hmm. But the cast in this is exceptional, including Whoopi Goldberg, who doesn't work in film that much anymore. I was very interested in seeing this, but I fear it's not going to be good.
And then projects of interest, there's The Smashing Machine.
You know, much like the Coens, the Safdie brothers have gone separate ways. And Benny Safdie apparently is putting together a new project called The Smashing Machine. And he's reuniting Emily Blunt with Dwayne Johnson, who were in that Jungle Cruise movie together. I like both of them well enough, so I'd be interested in seeing whatever this ends up being.
And then what is this? Alexander Payne?
And Paul Giamatti, during a recent Q&A, have announced that they're working on a period Western together.
What have they done together before?
The Holdovers.
Oh.
Yeah. The current hot ticket. Look forward to that. Snatching some trophies next weekend.
Ugh. And unfortunately, there is an entry in the obituary section. Richard Lewis died.
I mean, he's looked dead for a long time. Not to be cruel. He's
well, on Curb Your Enthusiasm, he did look pretty, you know, frail.
It's like you were watching Wendy Williams. Like, it's disturbing to behold.
Yeah.
So yeah, poor man passed. I highly recommend the film Drunks, an indie film from the mid 90s that also stars Faye Dunaway and Parker Posey and a whole slew of other notable people. But I rewatched about a year ago. I liked.
I knew him as a stand-up from you know, my ute. But then when I became, it's so funny that like I've never watched an episode of Seinfeld. But mm-hmm. I love Larry David and I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. So then I was reintroduced to Richard Lewis through Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Sure. You know, if you ever decided to watch Seinfeld, I feel like you would like everybody but Jerry.
Well, I mean, you're probably right, but...
I mean, but again, if there's any... Julia Louis-Dreyfus is very good as Elaine.
Well, and the other thing is like, I like her in Veep. And mm-hmm. then she did another show,
Something's Old, Christine, the old
like the New Adventures of Old Christine. Mm-hmm. And I watched that and I liked it. And so it's funny that I like her and I like Larry David.
Did you watch Wakanda Forever? She's in that.
No.
Yeah.
She's in Wakanda Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what my version is. Well, I think it was just during that time there were, I also get annoyed that people act like, why would I have been into Friends and Seinfeld when there were other things like Martin and Living Single? And
well, that's a very white thing to be like, you haven't caught up with this very important white show. Yeah.
It's like, none of these people remind me of the life I live and the people I'm around. So,
well, right. Cause if you turn that back and be like, well, do you know Martin? Do you know Living Single?
Yeah.
The reaction is like, no, it's very much the OJ jury. Ugh. Wow. Situation where whether they were going to watch Seinfeld or Martin.
Let's take a break. This week's secret film was my choice, and I chose the 2005 American crime drama Havoc.
Yeah, this movie is not good.
Why did I choose this? Someone messaged me about it saying like, oh my God, I just watched it. It's berserk. Like, you need to watch this. And when I read the premise, I was sold. So the premise is two affluent suburban girls clash with the Latino gang culture of East Los Angeles. So when you asked me, well, have you made a selection? I said, I think so. And then I told you what it was. And you're like, oh, wow, I own this DVD.
I do.
And I've never seen it.
Yes, I had a friend in as an undergrad that was obsessed with Anne Hathaway. And I think that's why I bought it for us to watch. We never did.
So you pulled it out of the archives. It's directed by Barbara Kopel. And she's
a two-time Academy Award winning documentarian, Harlan County, USA, An American Dream. She more recent documentary, she did that one about Gigi Gorgeous, which I didn't see. She did one on Mariel Hemingway that I have seen. Very notable. I believe this is her only narrative feature.
Wow, this movie was garbage. Like, straight garbage.
It's, oh my God. And the backstory behind it is equally interesting because the original screenwriter is a woman named Jessica Kaplan. And she wrote this in like 1995 when she was 16. So clearly, I think the influence of these Youth's Gone Wild films, especially like Larry Clark's Kids, this feels like it's trying to be Kids in LA, right? She died while it was filming in a airplane crash over the Fairfax district, I read, and she was only 24. So the film is dedicated to her, but it was rewritten by a guy named Stephen Gagan, who is a notable screenwriter and director of all his own. He Sirian is probably the best thing he's directed because everything else is caca, but I just think notably he wrote Traffic for Soderbergh. But this feels something weird happened.
I have quite a few notes, so let me try to tell the basic story. So it's about these self-proclaimed wiggers, it was a slang term that I had not heard in forever.
I haven't heard that in so long. And
friend, for people who don't know, is sort of a contraction of whites and the N-words. But so it's this group of rich white kids from the Pacific Palisades, which is like Malibu-ish, Brentwood, like rich area of LA. And they are totally like into hip hop culture. They've appropriated all the things. And we focus on a group of them, specifically Anne Hathaway and Bijou Phillips. Mm-hmm. But there's like the main guy whose name is
Anne's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Or the,
no, the one who gets, who pees on himself.
Mike Vogel, Toby.
Toby. Mm-hmm. So Toby's kind of the leader of this group. He's very, to me, it was, I mean, he's more handsome than Jamie Kennedy, but it was very like Jamie Kennedy's Malibu's most wanted. Anyway, one day they decide, because they're all rich and have nothing better to do, they decide to go cruising on the Sunset Strip. And it's not like hype enough for them. Like they need to see more action. So they decide to go east. Which I think is funny that during, because I can see, like, as someone from LA and like knowing how people talk about LA, I could see that these kids during this time just assume that anything east of where they live is like the ghetto.
And that's so, the way they're talking about the east.
So they keep talking about the east, but it's like they're in East Hollywood, and then it looks like they're in like Echo Park. But then I feel like people's impression of East LA is more like Boyle Heights. And so it's kind of ambiguous where they are at times, because we see Anne Hathaway at a point driving, like it seems like she's by MacArthur Park. And,
yeah, definitely.
But anyway, they go driving in the hood and Toby decides that he wants to buy some drugs.
They just pull off to any old street.
And the main cholo in charge of all of this, his name is Hector, played by Freddie Rodriguez,
best known probably from 6 Feet Under.
A very handsome young man, but also kind of puny.
He's a very short, he's a short king. Okay,
he's a short king. Toby like confronts Hector, like, you shorted me on these drugs I bought from you. And Hector threatens him with a gun, causes Toby to urinate on himself. So they're traumatized. They go back to school the next day. Clearly, Toby's upset. But that night, Anne Hathaway and her homegirls are at a party high on cocaine. And they decide, oh, let's go back to the hood and see those guys. So they go and they end up having kind of a fun time.
They go to it's called a house party, but everybody is just wandering around on the street, really. But yeah.
Yeah, it almost looks like a block party.
Yeah.
Then Anne Hathaway, seems like she's infatuated with Hector.
Yes.
So she goes back to wherever they are, because again, it looks to me more like they're in MacArthur Park than East LA. But
yeah,
she goes back and they kind of connect. So then she decides to go back again.
Well, they get arrested that night. When
They get arrested and she gets thrown in jail. Her parents.
Played by Michael Biehn and Laura Sangiacomo.
So the next day she goes back with Bijou Phillips and Hector's mad at her. Like, what are you even doing here? Like, bitch, you're the reason we got arrested. And then he goes, just kidding. I know you didn't tell on us because that's how we were able to get out. So why don't you come hang? So he says, they keep referencing this Alvarado Hotel and how they just all hang out at this like motel.
They get free rooms from the owner.
Yeah. So they go back and Bijou and Anne Hathaway decide that they want to be initiated into their gang.
This is after they smoke crack, by the way.
Oh, we're going to get to all
okay,
this.
Okay.
Yes, but you're right. This is after these bitches smoke crack.
Uh-huh.
So in order to join the gang, they have to basically sleep with one of the gang members. And they select the gang member by playing like rolling the dice to see who you're going to sleep with. So Anne and Bijou go in the room and they're ready to like be initiated. When Anne has second thoughts. And miraculously, Hector lets her like renege. I was surprised.
He put his hands on her neck. She got a little freaked out.
But then Bijou's like, nah, I'm going to go through with it and I'll take yours. So she's down for like.
Well, she rolled 3 on the dice. So she's supposed to sleep with 3.
So then she starts having sex with one and then the other joins in. And then a third joins in and that's when she gets freaked out.
Yeah, she. And it's unclear the way it's shot what exactly is happening.
But she says stop and they stop and they do leave. Stop.
Yeah.
So then they all leave. But then when Bijou gets home to her rich family and whatever story she told them, the parents interpreted as she was raped.
Gang raped.
So they of course, call the police. Hector gets arrested. And then
they only arrest him, though.
They only arrest the one. Mm-hmm. So then now Anne is conflicted because she's saying that they weren't raped. They elected to do this. And why is Bijou telling this lie? Combined with Toby and his little gang, which includes Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Channing Tatum.
Oh my God.
They are full on like wannabe thugs. They decide that they're going to ride up to the east side to, I guess, smoke the cholos. Mm-hmm. But while they're looking for the cholos have gotten in their car to drive to the Palisades to basically kill Anne Hathaway and Bijou so there are no witnesses. Mm-hmm.
But they don't get far.
They don't get far.
Police immediately pull them over, like, what you doing in this neighborhood?
Yeah.
Don't ever come back.
But the end of the film is the two parties, like the two groups of guys pass each other and they recognize each other in like an intersection.
Because and then the 16th Street. Because
the one has his tattoo. And then because the cholos recognize Toby because they had met him before when he bought the drugs. Mm-hmm. So then the screen goes black. We hear gunshots. And then the final scene of the film is Anne Hathaway. Because throughout this movie, for no reason that's explained to the audience, there's one kid making a documentary.
Yep. About these Pacific Palisades gangs, these white gangs.
And they have a name, PLCs. I don't know what that stands for.
Is that like SLC Punk? I don't know.
But they, Anne Hathaway basically sort of recaps everything. And it's the impression I got from her character is like this was a blip in her life and like she's going to move on from it. Uh-huh. Then that's the end of the movie. This shit was so crazy to me. And I can totally, like, knowing about this little, like, 14-year-old girl who wrote this script, and she herself is, like, an affluent white girl from West LA who wrote about this lifestyle she knows nothing about, mm-hmm. was paid $150,000 for that script. Mm-hmm. The production company was Michael Stipe's production company. So I'm like, I can just totally see, like, progressive white people thinking that they're telling a story that they have no business telling.
Very like American Fiction.
Well, and it's not they have no business. I mean, this rich white girl who probably saw a lot of her.
This is this person's experience.
Yeah, it's her experience, but I just think the writing of the other side of it, this would have been so much more interesting if it just, I'm just going to say what I thought would have been better. Uh-huh. I think the film should have started with the sex gang initiation scene, mm-hmm. where we don't know whether she was sexually assaulted or not. It's kind of vague. So for the bulk of the movie, there's an investigation on like what really happened. As the audience were questioning it, we sort of see how class, race, you know, all of the socioeconomic status, how all of that plays into what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, we learn that it was really an initiation that the girls elected to do. So I think this could have been really subversive and political, but the way it is so cringy.
It's crunchy. For
2005 standards.
I mean, you know, this is also Anne Hathaway desperately trying to get away from her Disney image, right? With the Princess Diaries and Ella
Enchanted. She thought a way to do that. And I wrote down how many times we see her breast. We see her titties 3 times.
Again, my friend that was obsessed with her was like, we got to watch Havoc because you see Anne Hathaway's breasts.
He
was
and I guess she hetero. Also thought she could break away from being Disney by using the N-word several many times. Oh
my God, that's so uncomfortable.
She, let me just go through my notes. So the opening scene are these rich kids and it looks like they're at like Venice Beach in a parking lot at the beach. And they are sort of on one side of the parking lot and then like the Latino gang is on the other side. Mm-hmm. And then they have like a West Side Story showdown.
Yep, basically.
But then when the police show up, one of the white kids shouts out, hootie hoo, and then they all run. That's when I knew this movie was going to be some bullshit.
Well, no, there's this stupid white kid documenting all this who played by Matt O'Leary, which is like, is that supposed to be Barbara Couple?
And like, when they ask him what his documentary is about, he says it's about what it means to be Wiggers. And I was like, this is too much for me.
That word is that because, yeah, back when this movie came out, that was everybody was talking like that. Yeah.
So then we get to Toby. His parents are super rich and they have multiple mansions, I guess, because he's in like one of their spare mansions where they don't care if he burns the furniture in an empty pool.
Yep.
So they're having a big kickback party. And all of a sudden, Anne Hathaway starts singing the Tupac song, How Do You Want It? Mm-hmm. And she's singing the N-word multiple times and seducing her boyfriend, which then
he's like, this is my bitch.
Which then leads to them driving to like a lookout point. Like, it looks like they drove to like Mulholland or something. Mm-hmm. And she's giving him the most awkward oral sex in a car you have seen. Mm-hmm. There's nothing sexy or hot about it. Okay. So then there's Anne Hathaway, then Bijou Phillips.
Oh my God.
Bijou Phillips looks like, I thought she looked like if you took, what's that lady's name with the forehead who played Wednesday Addams?
Christina Ricci?
Christina Ricci as Penelope with the pig nose.
Okay.
If you took that character, put her on crack, and then combined her with Essence Atkins, that's how.
There's a very specific formula. A very specific formula of people in situations.
To oh, get to God. Her. She just looks crazy. Although, I have to say, she fits the story more than Anne Hathaway.
She certainly does. She looks like she's on the school to prison pipeline for Orange the New Black.
She looks like the rich white girl who just wants to feel something because her life is like empty, so then she's going and doing these risky things. This movie could have been like, because I didn't know about this director until you just said it, but I get the vibes that she thinks she's doing something that feels like grounded in reality.
Yes.
And then I'm thinking, you know, the movie Freeway.
I love Freeway.
It almost feels like it's trying to give us like Kids mixed with Freeway, mm-hmm. And then with this literal documentary component to it. Mm-hmm. But I think Anne Hathaway is so laughably cringy in this movie.
She certainly is.
And then Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
I do too. This is like right after Mysterious Skin.
They have him saying the N-word multiple times. And I know these people probably read the script and thought this is really something powerful. So I don't blame them per se. Like, I'm not going to boycott anyone in the movie because I feel like all these people probably thought they were doing something important.
Yes.
But this shit is.
But you never saw that. Is that James Toback film from the late 90s called Black and White? Mm-hmm. With God, is that Bijou Phillips as well using the N-word in that?
Oh, my God.
And talking about like the shadings of what the hard R not means. It's not her then. That is it's Bijou Phillips from Black and White, and she also was in a Larry Clark film of the period that is very much in the same subgenre of these films with Brad Renfro called Bully. Oof. With also starring that woman that used to be married to Macaulay Culkin. About that murder in Florida. Bully is more interesting for sure and has more of a flavor. But this was her period. This was Bijou Phillips' time to shine.
I don't know why we don't get really any character development, or we don't get any kind of character development for any of these characters.
No, not at all.
But for Anne Hathaway, for some reason, we get a moment where she's supposed to go like see her dad for lunch. And then they just talk, and basically all it amounts to is him saying, how are you doing? And she goes, I'm doing all right. And then he says, well, yeah, I'm just overworked. Yeah, that makes sense. And then that's it. I think that we didn't need any of that. Like, we get it. You are rich kids who are like free to do whatever. You all drive fancy cars. You all have money. So clearly your parents are not. And you're out in these streets all the time. So you're, because at one point Anne Hathaway says she's like a latchkey kid, mm-hmm. except she lives in a mansion.
Oh, she has latchkey parents.
And has latchkey parents. But yeah, the movie's not long either. And I feel like it feels kind of repetitive. And
it's cringy, but also boring.
Boring.
Because also like when Mike Vogel gets the gun pointed to his head by Freddy Rodriguez, and it's like, you deserve it. Like you thought you could go get a return on your drugs.
And then watching him pee on himself.
These stupid children, these recidivous children.
Well, then the girls getting coked up to then think it would be a good idea to go to the same people who threatened them the night before. The dialogue so of course the rich white kids using the N-word and talking like, yeah, for show is embarrassing. But then we get to the cholo party. People are saying crazy shit too. Uh-huh. Like at one point, one of the cholo guys asked one of the girls, you want to smoke crack? He just says it like.
Oh, when Bijou starts calling that one guy essay, and he's like, ooh.
Or then someone says, no, dancing. No,
Anne Hathaway says it, yeah.
Yeah, she says, no dancing because it leads to the hard stuff. like
what the fuck,
like what's the hard stuff, like hard penises,
like,
or
yeah
or heroin,
hard dicks is what that leads to.
Oh, is that what she's saying?
I don't know, but it's just
because they're
so
already
stupid.
Doing crack, so I don't know what's worse than crack.
You bitches smoke crack, like
yeah. Oh my
god. Oh, and that scene, the crack scene.
Okay, so this is after it gets, after Anne Hathaway gets thrown in jail and then she's released, and then the little time she spends in jail, they do that obligatory, like, oh, this little white girl in a cell with these other women who are like hardened criminals. It was so ineffective.
They're like, your parents are here. And this black woman in the holding cell goes, your parents?
You got parents?
Like, yeah, yes, everybody does.
So then when Anne is released from the clink, she goes back home and Bijou's there to greet her. Mm-hmm. And they're hanging out. And Anne has some crack on her.
Yeah.
And she's like, do you want to smoke it? Well, I don't know how. Well, I called the poison control center and asked, like, what are the signs if I think my mom's doing crack? And they said, oh, well, you should see a lot of little aluminum foil around. Mm-hmm. So then that's all she knows, is to get aluminum foil and like a lighter.
So then they're freebasing. Yeah.
So they're freebasing crack. And then, no joke, one of them says, Whitney was right. Crack is whack.
Yeah.
I was not happy about that at all.
It is like the strangers with candy version of what the same screenwriter wrote in the film Traffic, where Erica Christensen is freebasing. That's what it feels like.
So then this is when they go back, the two of them, to visit the Cholos. They end up at the Alvarado Hotel.
They ask to be part of their gang, I guess.
And then they do the initiation sex. Bijou freaks out. And then the car ride home, Bijou is just blankly staring out of the window,
slack jawed and dead behind the eyes, like
and then at one point one of them says, how do people live out there?
Oh yeah, they're talking about like, oh, there's a fog over Mulholland and Encino, how do people live out there?
So now Bijou has made her parents think she was sexually assaulted. So all that shit goes down. And then Anne shows up to Bijou's house and Bijou freaks out. Like, what are you going to tell them? And Anne tells them the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, your nasty daughter rolled the dice to sleep with those men. She wanted to do it. And Bijou screams at her, I hate you. I can never be your friend again.
And she runs into the bathroom and...
and tries to kill herself.
Well, with Anne Hathaway predicting each move about which...
She's like, oh, you're going to slit your wrist? Well, it's just going to hurt. You're going to have ugly scars for 2 weeks. Oh, you're going to do that? Well, you need to do that.
You don't have enough pills in there to kill yourself.
Oh, my God. I mean, I felt like...
I hate these people.
I felt like I was in another dimension watching this movie.
Well, I was just like, I don't need to watch this opera. They could all expire tomorrow and be fine.
I really do think that a more interesting story would have been sort of a suspense crime drama about whether or not these girls were assaulted. Mm-hmm. And then we learn in the end that they are the reason this all happened. And maybe we end up seeing one of the guys getting convicted and going to prison for 20 years when really, you know, some sort of commentary on the dynamics between these two groups of people. And
well, because the tagline is something like, some lines can never be crossed. Okay. No, but what happens when these ignorant ass white girls think that they can just stomp up all over here,
yeah,
and do whatever they want? And
well,
what are the consequences, yeah, of that? Not that it shouldn't happen.
There's a missed opportunity when Anne gets arrested because they have all the Cholos lined up against a fence with their hands behind their heads. And then this white lady cop sees Anne Hathaway, asks for her ID, and she's like, Pacific Palisades. Mm-hmm. She's like, come here. And then she takes her to the car and she's asking her, like, what were you doing? And she's like, oh, I was lost, so I came here for directions. And she's like, you're underage and you were loitering. You're going to the...
Yeah.
So then she takes her downtown and then calls the parents. So I felt like that could have been an opportunity to show that she's receiving like preferential treatment, or she's like...
Well, because she is.
She kind of is. I mean, she still gets arrested and taken downtown. So it's like...
She's a minor and, you know...
I think whomever directed this thought that they were... I don't think I understand what the message was behind this.
I don't, well, especially as it ends, like some gunshots happen off screen and Anne Hathaway talking all cheery to this documentarian about
Because I think if I had to say my thought about what the point was, I would say it's based on the final scene. And I think it's that these rich, privileged kids get to enjoy experimenting and making mistakes, and they're still going to be able to move on and have very fruitful lives, yes. Right? Versus...
Well, and then the type of code switching, the willful code switching that they're doing is fun. It's a charade. It's not...
Well, because there's a scene where Anne Hathaway literally does that with the documentarian. Yes. She pretends to be a Wigger, and then she pretends to be a hippie or something. Yeah. And then she pretends to be like this prissy little college student.
Which I said felt very, very much like Derek Barry giving all those impressions in 90 seconds.
So I guess that's what I think it's meant to be. But the problem is we also don't really see how extravagant these kids' lives are. I mean, they kind of, I guess I was confused because the way it's shot and when we see the groups together, even the opening scene when they're at the beach and they're like, oh, the rich white kids and the poor Latino kids, you really couldn't tell them apart except that some are Latino and some are white.
Right.
Like, you don't see their cars. You don't see how, like, they're all dressed the same. And then we do see
that those ugly ass baggy clothes all the boys wearing.
Well, that was the fashion. It's horrible.
I know. I was wearing that shit too. I had JNCOs, mammoth JNCOs, looked like a skirt.
I could see that, even though I hated this show, The Idol. With the weekend,
Lily Rose.
I almost feel like if it were to be remade, I would want it to have that vibe.
There needs to be, which it makes me now curious to rewatch Bully because I haven't seen it in so many years. But there's a genre element to that, and it's based on a true story that I think ties that better than this does. But and also the title does not fit because Havoc means, you know, just significant destruction, right? So who?
You know what? That's, yeah. I had that question after we were done. Like, what is the widespread destruction happening in this movie?
Who is laid waste to?
Because the Cholos, the East LA gang member people, it seems like their life really isn't disrupted by anything that's happening here. And then for the girls, there are no repercussions for anything.
No, not really. Even Bijou Phillips, who cried wolf, basically. And
yeah, what's the habit?
There is none.
And then the tagline for this movie is "Too much is never enough."
Oh God.
Which I guess kind of makes sense, but the problem is the film doesn't show that these kids live in excess. There doesn't really appear to be much decadence. Toby drives like a classic lowrider, which of course would not be cheap. And then we see Anne driving like a Mercedes convertible. Mm-hmm. But the film doesn't look lush when we're with them.
It doesn't look lush, nor does it look gritty.
No. I mean, and then I think the way East LA is shot, it's just confusing. Like, where are we?
Because you said you looked at the budget was $9 million on this and it made not that much.
According to Wikipedia, the box office is $371,000.
So. Yeah, this was a hard flop. You know, remember also that this was the same year that Anne Hathaway, this was her probably eclipsed by Brokeback Mountain, really. This was also the same year. And
this is the same year as Brokeback Mountain?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Damn. And this movie feels so low budget to be.
She's playing a teenager in this, and then we get to see her be a middle-aged woman in Brokeback Mountain. It's got a couple Alien alumni in here, of course, Michael Biehn Hicks from Aliens, but also you don't see his face playing Freddie Rodriguez's brother, Chino, but I'm like, God, I recognize that voice. And it's Raymond Cruz from Alien Resurrection, because every time I see him, I always think of Winona Ryder saying DiStefano.
Oh. Well, what would you give Havoc?
One. This is garbage.
I would give Havoc 1 out of 5. I do think it would, you know, if there were a screening like on a big screen somewhere, I would say it'd be fun to go like watch it with a, I would love to see how other people react to
I this. Would love to see a cast reunion. I want to see Anne Hathaway and Joseph Gordon-Levitt being like, yeah.
If I ever meet Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Anne Hathaway, you better, just like how when I met Sharon Stone, I asked her about Border Run. If I ever meet Anne Hathaway or Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I'm asking them about Havoc. Well, that's all I have. Mm-hmm. Thank you to everyone who is joining us on Patreon.
Yes.
We get more and more people every day.
Just like the Cranberry song, changing every day in every possible way.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No. Oh, you get to see Love Lies Bleeding tonight. I'm excited to bring you.
Oh, well, good for you. Ta-ta. Thank you.